It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this fourth day of May. May the fourth be with you. 2023, this is The Horn, headon.live. That's where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That's where you go if you want to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live right now, well, by gosh, by gum, by golly, run on over to headon.live. Feel free to jump in the chat room, pick out a screen name and password if you've never been there before. We love seeing newbies in there. And you don't have to, you know, learn the secret handshake or ride a goat or anything like that. And you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has declined to fold space today and become man cave. He's capably assisted by Horn Chief Mathematician and Chief Agronomist and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. And you're mightily welcome to come by and participate. If you are listening to the podcast, well, we are trying, for all we're worth, to grow our little community. And one of the best ways to do that is to like the podcast and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Republic, Stitcher. I mean, there's all kinds of podcasting platforms out there. Just like and subscribe, leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors what an amazing amazing little program this is. You know, this is one of the oldest progressive broadcasts in the country now. Yeah, long since the demise of Air America. That didn't take long. We're still here. And have been here. I've been back to the whole back to progressive broadcasting since, well, roughly 20 years ago. And then The Horn itself was founded as a standalone internet operation on October the 24th, 2005. So 20 years behind the microphone, more or less, and coming up on 18 for The Horn all by itself. Without any terrestrial radio involved. So that being the case, anyway, if you would be so kind as to hit that like button if you listen to TuneIn, we're trying to come up with 1,000 unique listeners just at TuneIn. That's not counting everybody else everywhere else. So thank you. Most importantly, though, thank you, however it is you listen. Thanks for being part of this amazing little community and this amazing little experiment in independent liberal progressive broadcasting. Did I do the hi, I'm Robin part yet? Because I'm high. No, I'm not high. I'm Robin. Hi. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thank you ever so kindly to Paul. Thank you, Paul. And thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. And thank you to Thomas. Thank you so very much. Thank you to Cecilia. Thank you, Cecilia. So our fundraising goal has actually dropped down to only $530. So it's not, we're not at one of those horrible places yet. $530, but I have to pay the bill for the stress line this evening. And, well, it's part of the overall cellular internet bill and or cellular bill, and Verizon sucks, in case that's an unpaid product damnation. Verizon sucks, but so does every other cellular provider around here. So that's pressing, and then the extortion racket known as Appalachian Electric Power is breathing down my neck. So keeping up with fundraising is a huge thing. So if you'd like to help out and maybe get us fully funded for yesterday, well, fully funded for yesterday is $230, and then today's the regular $300 we try to raise every program. And just by way of explanation, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I got that nasty little email that I shared with y'all on Friday of an individual carping about fundraising for this program. And it annoys me because, and yeah, I've thought about it. It hurts me because we run this operation on the last dry rotted frayed thread of a tattered shoestring. And there was the implication in that email that somehow or another that, I don't know, that we should be able to just do this for love. Or with, and, you know, if I was independently wealthy, that's what I would do. But I'm not. So I do something here that no one else really does. And that is, I actually tell you what life is like here at the fabulous Kincaid, the magnificent Kincaid Mansion and the fabulous Horn Studios, where, by the way, it's only May and we're already approaching bikini season here. 75 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studios right now. Oh, soon it'll be warm enough to do a few laps in the fabulous Olympic-sized, pancreas-shaped Horn swimming pool if we hadn't had to have it concreted in. Well, and to you as well, Brother Deacon Asa. May the 999 be with you as well. Jesus. But when we fundraise, that's what we're talking about. Keeping things going as frugally as possible. Remember, I don't even have health care. So, you know, and frankly, we couldn't do it on what we raise here. But we do the best we can. So it is, your participation and your help is so critically important. And I've got to pay that bill this evening, or you know, we won't have the stress line until, I do. Okay. Where to begin? You know, this is one of those days when, back, if you're dealing with professional for-profit media level broadcasting, you have to make editorial decisions. What am I going to lead with? Because the rules of primacy and recency obtain here, as well as anywhere else in human communication. And there are two stories competing for lead for this installment of the program. And I've kind of been going back and forth all day long. Do we lead with the conviction
of the Proud Boys for their role and their actions in the domestic terrorist attack on the capital of the United States on the 6th day of January, 2021? Do we do that? Or do we lead with yet another installment of Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas, crooked as a dog's hind leg? And so the nature of that analysis, at least the way I came to it, is to try to figure out which has the most lasting impact. And for my money, in the long run, that's crooked as a dog's hind leg, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas. Oh, what I wouldn't give just once to hear somebody in the Senate of the United States or the House of Representatives, either way, refer to him as Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas, and sort of remind the world of just exactly how long this originalist monster has been dirty. Because if one believes the account given at his confirmation hearing, and I do, I still believe Anita Hill, then he was dirty long before Pappy Bush even nominated him for a seat on the high court. And the dirtiness has just continued year after year after year after year. And so, well, here we are. Jesus. It's kind of, well, I don't want to say amazing, but it's stunning that we have looked the other way, or just, I guess, didn't know, all of his many wholly and entirely corrupt dealings with his owner, I mean friend, Harlan Crow. Good God. You know, first there was the ProPublica report about how dirty Harlan how dirty his relationship with Fappy Thomas is and was and has been. Harlan Crow would not have been able to pick out Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas in a police lineup prior to Fappy getting on the court. But once the Federalist Society established Fappy's bona fides, and once old Pappy Bush nominated him, and once he pissed and moaned and bellyached about a high-tech lynching when he was lying his miserable ass off on how he sexually harassed Anita Hill, and, you know, had the enabling and assistance of Arlen Specter, and yes, the man who is now President of the United States, Joe Biden, on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And once he got on the court, he and proved himself to be a reliably fascist Republican hack and flack and pettifogging jurist. Well, and suddenly, Harlan discovered Fappy. And howdy do, and how do you like that? And so, you know, first it was the vacations. $500,000. To go to Indonesia on Harlan Crow's private jet. And then swan around the islands in the yacht. That was the first revelation. Then the second one came when we found out that Harlan just conveniently bought the little shabby two-bedroom house in Savannah, Georgia, where Fappy's mama lived, a little two-bedroom affair. And spent thousands of dollars renovating it, saying that if he eventually wanted to turn it into a historical monument to America's greatest black Supreme Court justice. Oh, Jesus, pardon me. I could puke. And that Fappy benefited from, and just like the vacations, did not report, even though there are federal statutes that require his reportage. Well, now there's another one. Oh, and I can't get over that. The email from Darlene last night that detailed the name of the company that Fappy and Ginsurrectionist founded. It was a real estate firm, an unreported rental income, Ginger Limited Partnership and Ginger Holdings LLC. Jesus, that's still, thank you so much. I would never have seen that if it were not for you, Darlene. Ginger Limited Partnership, Ginger Holdings, LLC. Well, now we have a new development. Turns out, Fappy's bestie, back in 2008, Fappy wanted to send his grandnephew to Hidden Lake Academy. And Hidden Lake Academy is a private boarding school in, as our friend Malloy describes it, the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. The grandnephew had been living with Fappy and Ginsurrectionist in the D.C. burbs for the previous 10 years. And Fappy took legal custody of the kid when he was 6 years old. And after the fact, claimed that he was raising young Mark Martin, not the NASCAR driver, as a son. Well, to go to, what is it, Hidden Valley? No, Hidden Lake Academy costs about $6,000 a month. Even I, shabby little cipherer that I am, know that that comes out to $72,000 a year. And I guess Fappy just couldn't do that on the paltry, meager wages of a Supreme Court justice. Not to worry, though, because Har was right there to write the check. And as ProPublica reports it in their exclusive investigative journalism, the bank statement for the school from July 2009 was buried in unrelated court filings, and it shows that the tuition payment for that month came from the company owned by billionaire real estate magnate and Supreme Court Justice owner Harlan Crow. A former administrator at Hidden Lake Academy, Christopher Grimwood, said that the payments went well beyond that month. In fact, Harlan Crow paid young Mark Martin's tuition there the entire time that he was a student, which was about a year. Apparently, he didn't last long at Hidden Valley Ranch Academy. God, I wanted to say that so badly. Hidden Lake Academy. It's a funny language thing, you know, hidden, and my brain fills in Valley Ranch. Says more about me than it does the institution. But he was there for a year, and after he left Hidden Lake, Mark Martin, the young grandnephew and ward of Fappy Thomas, sent him off to Randolph-Macon Academy in Virginia. Christopher Grimwood, the former administrator at Hidden Lake, said, Harlan said he was paying for the tuition at Randolph-Macon Academy as well, because at some point, Grimwood was also invited to come up and swan around with the crows up at his Adirondack Mountain cabin, estate, resort, whatever. ProPublica clearly says that it is still uncertain exactly how much Har ponied up for his dear friend, the Supreme Court Justice, for the tuition. But if he paid for all 4 years, ProPublica notes, it could have run more than $150,000. So, well, naturally, at this point in the game, Fappy didn't report that gift on any of his Supreme Court disclosure forms. Nope. Now, ProPublica does note that Fappy did disclose a gift of $5,000 for Martin's education from another friend. And it's really impossible to understand why he reported the $5,000, but not the $150,000. Oh, wait. And, ProPublica cites a man named Mark W. Bennett, a retired federal judge, who said he was actually a friend of Thomas, and declined ProPublica reports to comment for the record about the specifics of Thomas's actions. But he said that when he himself was on the bench and he was an appointee of Bill Clinton, he wouldn't even let his lawyer buddies buy him lunch. Again, because he wanted to make sure that he avoided even the appearance of impropriety. Mark W. Bennett did go on to say, you can't be having secret financial arrangements. Fappy, meanwhile, continues to maintain, and he offered no statement in regard to having been busted over his grandnephew. But he stood on the... Har-Har is one of my dearest friends, even though I didn't know him till they let me onto the court. I added that last part. Well, among our dearest friends... And also, there was a ringing defense of Har-Har. Harlan Crow has long been passionate about the importance of quality education and giving back to those less fortunate grandnephews of Supreme Court justices. I added that part, too. Especially at-risk youth. One wonders what it is about being the ward of a Supreme Court justice that put young Mark Martin at risk, but I guess we'll never know. It's disappointing. You can hear the dudgeon rising, can't you? It's disappointing that those with partisan political interests, you know, partisan political interests in seeing to it that the Supreme Court of the United States is not a wholly owned subsidiary of one and sundry billionaires, would try to turn helping at-risk youth with tuition assistance into something nefarious or political. God, you can almost hear the tinkering whorehouse piano in the background, can't you? Har-Har and his wife have supported many young Americans at a variety of schools, including his alma mater, Randolph-Macon Academy. Good Lord. I don't know. Eventually, we'll probably find out that the Fappy was pimping out Ginsurrectionists or something. I don't know. Richard Painter was a White House ethics counsel for dim leader George W. Bush during the Reign of Error. And that even that man, who I'm sure saw his own fair share of sketchy ethical behavior, or unethical, said, this is what, again, ethics counsel to George W. Bush. This is way outside the norm. This is way in excess of anything I've seen. And this next line almost made me shoot sparkling seltzer out my nose. Back when he was at the White House, Painter said, anybody who had taken what Fappy took would have been fired. This, the quote, this amount of undisclosed gifts, you'd want to get them out of the government. And that guy is a rock solid Republican of the same philosophical bent. Because, you know, you don't get to be White House ethics counsel for a corrupt American president who starts illegal wars by being you know, some sort of liberal, fire-breathing Clarence Darrow. ProPublica makes it clear that justices have to report many of the gifts that they receive, as well as gifts to their spouses and dependent children. And dependent child, I guess, has a narrow definition. And, here we go. Turns out there's a loophole, because young ward and grandnephew Mark Martin wouldn't have fit within the definitions, because Fappy was his legal guardian and not his daddy, although he was raising him as a son, according to Fappy. Other people consulted by ProPublica said, you know, if there's any weasel room here, it's by way of saying, well, these were gifts to young Mr. Martin and not to Fappy himself. On the other hand, Kathleen Clark, an ethics law expert at Washington University in St. Louis, said, the most reasonable interpretation of the statute is that this was a gift to Thomas and thus had to be reported. It's common sense. It's all to the financial benefit of Clarence Thomas. Right. Because had Har-Har not stepped in, then Fappy, if he really wanted his young ward to go to Hidden Valley Ranch Academy, or Randolph-Macon Academy, would have had to foot the bill. And that would have been an economic hit to Fappy's own income. And so, in fact, it did inure to his benefit that his dearest friend, Har-Har, rode to the rescue and ponied up. This is bolstered by the fact that Mr. Martin is now in his 30s, and when ProPublica contacted him, he said, I had no idea who was paying my tuition. I didn't know Harlan Crow had paid it. But then went on to defend Har-Har and said, I think his intentions behind everything is just a friend and just a good person. Just a friendly next-door billionaire, you know, right. And God knows, one can probably never fully tally the millions upon millions of dollars that Har-Har, the joke's on us, has given to various right-wing groups in an attempt to shape the government and the culture itself along right-wing proto-fascist lines. Har-Har has said that, well, I was just extending hospitality to Fappy, just like I do to other dear friends. God, before long, dear friends is going to take on the cachet in the right wing of sincerely held religious beliefs. He gave an interview to the Dallas Morning News, Har-Har did, in which he cast his memory back to that golden lit memory of the first time he looked across a room and saw Fappy, and Fappy looked across the room and saw him, and their eyes met. Actually, it was the fact that Fappy was in Dallas for an anti-regulation think tank speech. Job-killing regulations! And Har-Har offered to fly him to the event on his private jet. Har-Har, of course, was on the jet.
During that flight, we found out we were kind of simpatico,
he told the Dallas Morning News. The next year, they started talking about taking custody of young Mr. Martin. And Martin's daddy, who was Fappy's nephew, was at that time in the joint as a result of a drug case. And it touched Fappy deeply because his, you know, growing up, he grew up with an absent father, he has said. And his grandparents took him in under very similar circumstances. So Fappy and Ginsurrectionist talked to the parents and said, "Ah, let us raise the boy." And Fappy said, "He'll have the best of everything. His own room, a private school education, lots of extracurricular activities." So they got legal custody of the kid around January 1998. And he lived with Fappy and Ginsurrectionist from the age of 6 to 19. And so he got to go on the fun jet trips with Har-Har along with Fappy and Ginsurrectionist. And by the way, the resort in the Adirondacks is Camp Top Ridge. And the young lad went on a couple of cruises on, hoo-wee, Har-Har's 162-foot super yacht. And you got to ride jet skis off to one side of the yacht. They also cruised on the yacht in Russia and the Baltics. And they toured St. Petersburg in a rented helicopter. They went to the Yusupov Palace, the site of Rasputin's murder. Along for the ride was the president of the American Enterprise Institute, Chris DeMuth. Another right-wing grift. By the way, the Thomas's trips to the Baltics on the superyacht, those weren't reported either. Good Lord, if this had been a so-called liberal Supreme Court justice, we never would have heard the end of it. If it was a liberal Supreme Court justice right now, there would probably be impeachment proceedings underway in the House. Randolph-Macon Academy is, of course, a military boarding school. Oh, dear. Because the Thomases grew frustrated with public schooling in Fairfax County, Virginia, one of the richest counties in the entire United States. Young Mr. Martin graduated in 2010. It was somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 a year to go there. In fact, Fappy and Har-Har went on a date to Randolph-Macon for the unveiling of a statue that Har-Har paid for Randolph-Macon of the Air Force Honor Guard. And the statue's just a few steps down the way from Crow Hall, which Har Har also built. Named for his family and his daddy, Trammell Crow. Hidden Lake Academy is long since gone. They went bankrupt. And that's where the records of the tuition payment that began, that was the initial pull of the thread that led to all of this unraveling came from. July 2009, that's when Crow Holdings LLC wired $6,200 to the school. Meanwhile, they're scrambling a bit over it. Crow Amalgamated Holdings, or whatever the hell it is, saying that
these tuitions have always been paid solely from personal funds, sometimes held at and paid through the family business.
Money laundering. And so Grimwood told ProPublica that Crow wired the money once a month to pay Martin's tuition. And Grimwood said he felt like he was duty-bound to tell the public about it now. And it, I guess $6,200 would have been too much for the Thomases, because they were only pulling in, oh, let's see, in 2006, only $500,000 a year. It was still rough a year later when they were knocking down $850,000 a year. That's how much Fappy made on the court and how much Ginsurrectionist made at the Heritage Foundation, and how much they made from a payment for Fappy's memoir. And then, again, we're back to the tinkling tinny whorehouse piano. At one time, Thomas had to pay for private school himself. Martin told ProPublica that Fappy sold his Corvette, his most prized car, to pay for a year of tuition. But Martin couldn't remember when that happened. The $5,000 gift, ProPublica found out, came from one of Fappy's RV community buddies. A guy named Earl Dixon, who owned a pest control company in Florida, ponied up the $5,000 to help defray the cost of young Mr. Martin's education. And he did disclose that. And so that kind of tells us that he knew that paying for his young ward's education was, in fact, a benefit to him. All in all, what we have here is a pattern of practice of trying to hide the monumental, obscene, vulgar largesse of his dearest friends. So I said earlier that I decided that this was of greater weight than the Proud Boys conviction. And I think my judgment was correct. But by the same token, maybe it's meaningless. Maybe it's meaningless because nothing is going to come of it. The multimillionaire, you know, again, this is ProPublica's work, and the multimillionaire for-profit media are going to do nothing or something near enough to nothing to be indistinguishable from nothing. And even assuming they did something, and there was a story a day, and we're getting pretty close to that, a story a day about the corruption of Fappy Thomas. Fappy will brazen it through because he knows that he can only be removed from office with a procedure that begins in the House of Representatives, and maggots always stand by maggots. And I'm so intensely frustrated by that. Christopher in Oregon said, Fappy's kid. Wait a minute, didn't David Bowie write a song about all those kids, hardy har har educationalized in America? What, young Americans? Or I'm afraid of America? Or this is not America? Which one do you have in mind, Christopher? Darlene in Connecticut taught Richard Painter's pretty good, actually, she says. I was thinking ProPublica was far from done on Claire Claire and Jin Jin. Claire Claire and Jin Jin. Hold on. So now we got Claire Claire and Jin Jin and Har Har. Lordy. Emilio says, stop it, Robin. There's no reason to believe that Harlan's you-know-what in Thomas's mouth will have any influence on his decision. Oh, you're awful. I've got a crow in my mouth. Brings a whole new meaning to eating crow, doesn't it? It's usually something you don't want to do. You know, well, I screwed up. I got to eat some crow. No, no, not if you're not if you're Claire Claire and Jin Jin. Eating crow is their favorite treat. So there's that. And then there's the there's the Proud Boys. Four of the five charged in the Proud Boys trial that has gone on for 13 weeks. Well, the jury came back today. They deliberated for about 30 hours over the course of 7 days. And they brought back convictions for, like I said, four out of five. Enrique Tarrio, Ethan Nordine, Joseph Biggs, and Zachary Real, convicted of seditious conspiracy, a plot to oppose the government with force under the Civil War era law. They're facing, under that charge alone, 20 years in federal prison. Dominic Pozzola walked. He was acquitted. Interestingly, when he testified, Pozzola lambasted the prosecution as essentially dirty. The four were also found guilty of obstructing an official proceeding, a felony. It also carries up to 20 years in prison. Conspiring to impede Congress from performing its duties and obstructing law enforcement during a civil disorder. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Kelly did declare a mistrial on some of the outstanding counts because the jury said they could not reach a unanimous verdict. And the DOJ issued a statement saying, the government's evidence at trial demonstrated the crucial role that these men and their followers played in breaking through the multiple security lines that protected the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Their crimes and the crimes of other members of the mob that descended on the Capitol struck at the very heart of our democracy. That was Matthew Graves, the U.S. attorney. So at this point, there are more than 500 people who've entered guilty pleas to charges, you know, slap on the wrist misdemeanors for the most part, that the DOJ brought in relation to the domestic terrorist attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. There have been others, about 80 of them, who have been convicted at trial, including but not limited to Oathkeeper founder Stewie, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, bang, Rhodes, and several of the other Oathkeepers. The government really took this particular prosecution seemingly more in earnest than others because of the, if nothing else, because of the massive amount of evidence they presented against these fascist freaks. At the closing argument, prosecutor Connor Mulroe characterized the Proud Boys as a, quote, fighting force lined up behind Donald Trump and ready to commit violence on his behalf in order to overturn the November 2020 election. They painted a picture of Enrique Tarrio and the other four as having bought paramilitary gear and urging members to descend on the capital of the United States. The Reuters report I'm looking at notes that the Proud Boys describe themselves as a Western chauvinist group. Well, the fact is, the Proud Boys were founded by Gavin McInnes, who used to be with Vice News. He was one of the founders of Vice News, I believe. It was Vice. And they exist for the sole purpose of being bully boys and street brawlers against anyone who is not of a right-wing bent. Enrique Tarrio's pettifogger is Naib Hassan. And he said the prosecution want to use Enrique Tarrio as a scapegoat for Donald Trump and those in power. Because their defense centered on, and this is interesting, blaming Nitwit Nero for what the Proud Boys did.
Stand down and stand by.
The only one of the five charged who didn't enter the Capitol was Enrique Tarrio, simply because he wasn't in Washington, D.C. that day, having been ordered by a judge to stay the hell out of Washington after he was arrested on January 4th for burning a Black Lives Matter banner at a church. But the prosecution successfully argued that he helped direct the activities of the Proud Boys from a remote location. Don't you just bet that they're all praying that Nitwit Nero is reelected in November of 2024? Because those dirtbags know that Nitwit Nero will pardon them. Just like he pardoned Roger Stone. Just like he pardoned Steve Bannon. And if that happens, well, justice will be, for all intents and purposes, deader than Pharaoh's cat. It truly is. And I don't think I'm being hyperbolic here. A perilous time. Har Har, Jin Jin, and Claire Claire. Lee in New York says, obligatory Star Wars reference, add Jar Jar to your list. Oh, we do need a Jar Jar in there somewhere. Happy Star Wars Day. Signed, Lee, looking for his lightsaber in New York City. May the 4th be with you. Yes. Thanks, Lee. And Matt in San Francisco says, subject line, Thomas, this makes me so mad. In my previous life as a store manager for a major national retailer, I could be fired for accepting a gift from a vendor. Anything. Like tickets to a ball game. Something as simple as a coffee mug. That kind of thing. I was held, Matt notes, to a higher standard to run a store with a bullseye on the front than Clarence is held to pass judgment on all of us. Incredible. It's incredible. It's infuriating. And what you say, Matt, is also true. There are higher ethical responsibilities for clerks in doctor's offices who handle and dispense medical records than there are for people like Fappy if they decide that the rules don't apply to them. And Fappy has clearly made that decision. And at this point in time, I go back to my previous argument. Namely, that this cries out for somebody at the DOJ to investigate all of this. ProPublica's already done all the legwork. Pull together the documents, interview the people that'll talk to you, and go have a... Well, grab a ham sandwich and go have a chat with the federal grand jury. And I don't care how long and how hard Miss Lindsay and Cruz and Josh Hollenass and Mike Lee piss and moan. Well, they can die mad about it. Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, is, as I said at the beginning of all of this, crooked as a dog's hind leg. Presidents are not the only ones with whom we have an unaccountability problem. The President of the United States is not the only government official who is, for all intents and purposes, above the law. The Supreme Court operates on the honor system. And the honor system is great for like a basket of snack crackers and Nutri-Grain bars and whatnot in the company break room with a coffee can with a slit cut in the lid where you drop in some nickels and dimes or quarters or dollar bill, you know, to help defray the cost of whoever is kind enough to go out and do that work for their good and pick those things up for their coworkers. And even that can be a losing proposition. And at one point in time, the honor system actually may have worked in the Supreme Court. But those days are long damn gone. And do let's recall that the man who was the absolute pillar of American constitutional jurisprudence, Justice John Marshall, sat in judgment of all the people in the young United States, at the same time that he was busy enslaving people. So it's not like that body does not have a taint upon it from jump, as does the entirety, almost, of this constitutional government. Washington, slave owner. Adams, not a slave owner. Jefferson, slave owner, slave raper. Madison, slave owner. Monroe, slave owner. Jackson, slave owner. You get a brief respite there with Martin Van Buren of New York and John Quincy Adams. James Knox Polk of Tennessee, slave owner. There's a reason we call that this country's original sin. Theo, the rest of your message didn't come through. People who handle medical records. Yeah. I know a little bit about that because I've been jumping through some flaming barbed wire hoops lately, trying to get mine. So those are the two biggies that begin the program. We have other things. Another little piece of legal news. Another jury verdict came out today. Ed Sheeran has been held not liable by a jury on a charge of copyright infringement. He was sued by the estate of Marvin Gaye on a claim that Thinking Out Loud stole the music to Marvin Gaye's unforgettable Let's Get It On. The case was tried to a jury in Manhattan. And this was nothing like the Proud Boys trial and nothing like the E. Jean Carroll trial. Ed Sheeran actually played guitar and sang in court. The jury took 3 hours to deliberate and go, nah, no, he didn't do that. Ed Sheeran said, I'm obviously very happy with the outcome of the case, and it looks like I'm not having to retire from my day job after all. But at the same time, I'm unbelievably frustrated that baseless claims like this are allowed to go to court at all. And if you listen to the two side by side, there's no comparison. And Ben Crump, the superstar civil rights lawyer, represented Ed Townsend, the co-writer of the song. It was his family, not Marvin Gaye's, who brought the lawsuit. And the lawsuit said that Sheeran took the rhythm, chord progression, and other elements for Thinking Out Loud without permission from the copyright owner of the song. I've listened to the two side by side. I'm certainly no musicologist, but wow, there's no comparison. None. And for those of us of a certain age, you know, we remember that George Harrison got dinged for just straight up ripping off He's So Fine to create My Sweet Lord. Now, you play those side, you play those one after another, there's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever. This is not that. Benjamin Crump said that Ed Sheeran recognized the magic of Let's Get It On, and that that's why Ed Sheeran was able to win his first Grammy. And so it was that in court, in Manhattan, Ed Sheeran performed passages from Thinking Out Loud and talked about the creative process whereby he and Amy Wodge co-wrote the tune. And in fact, the producers of the song got to the point where they referred to it as Ed's Van Morrison song. Jesus. It is, it's sometimes astonishing to ponder the things that judges are asked to decide. Things that judges ought not have to decide. And in fact, that they have no business. Like, for instance, whether a woman should be able to make her own decisions about whether or not to reproduce. Which brings us to Oklahomistan. And a woman named J.C. Statton. At the time all this happened, she was 25 years old. She'd been married for a couple of years to a fella, and they weren't necessarily trying to get pregnant, but they had reached a decision that if they did, cool. If they didn't, also okay. And, well, J.C. Statton became pregnant. Unfortunately, J.C. Statton comes from a place called Meeker, Oklahomistan, and she started bleeding early in her first trimester. She said, I was doing the dishes when all of a sudden I felt really sick, and I looked down and saw blood soaked through my jeans. And she started screaming for her husband, Dustin. So, they grabbed up the kids and went to the nearest emergency room, unfortunately, in Oklahomistan. And the nearest emergency room, oops, turned out to be a Catholic hospital. At the Catholic hospital, they said, well, honey, you're having a miscarriage. You just need to go on home. Oh, really? Imagine that. You just go home. J.C. Statton said, I think they probably should have done more rather than just sending me away, but I understood why they couldn't, you know. Because the precious little fetus... And so the article goes on to explain that there are three separate abortion bans in effect in Oklahomistan, thanks to our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties. in Dobbs in their decision, their entirely corrupt decision in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. You know, the opinion that favorably cites witch burning and witch trials. Rabia Mukadam is the senior staff attorney at the Center for Reproductive Rights. She said, Oklahoma has three abortion bans in effect, and each of them has different language in describing the medical exceptions. It resulted in extreme confusion about what constitutes a sufficient health condition for a doctor to provide a medically necessary abortion. This is not an accident. The lawyer didn't say that. I said that. It's meant, the three laws are meant to sow confusion so that women have, medical providers will be completely at sea trying to figure out if they're going to go to the joint for saving a woman's life. So the next morning, J.C. Statton got on the phone, made an appointment with her OBGYN. The OBGYN did an ultrasound and did blood work. And as a result of that, they found out that J.C. Statton had a non-viable pregnancy, that she was carrying a baby that would never live. The problem she had was called a partial molar pregnancy. The embryo that had implanted in her uterus had too many chromosomes. It can happen from any number of for any number of reasons, but one of them is if a single egg is fertilized by two sperm. And then when the placenta forms, it's massively cystic and can even cause cancer. Because sometimes the malcreated tissue keeps growing cancerously even after the end of the pregnancy. And what they determined at the OBGYN that day was that J.C. Statton had had a cyst, a placental cyst rupture, the precancerous cyst. And so even then, knowing that she was carrying a fetus that could not become a baby, or take what the Bible calls in the Old Testament the first breath of life, and so, once again, she's in that godforsaken Catholic hospital. And she told People magazine, my doctor said we're in a Catholic hospital, so I'm not supposed to talk about this. But your baby will not make it. And this is very dangerous. You only have one option, and we can't do that here, getting you transferred somewhere else. That took at least a week, and over the course of that week, this young woman got sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker, and the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Republican, amosexual, Christian, evangelicals in Oklahoma state government didn't give a good goddamn, because that was exactly what they intended to happen when they did this to every woman in Oklahoma. She said, it had gotten so bad after a week, I couldn't eat, I could hardly walk, I was really lethargic. Then the bleeding started again. And it scared me, she said. It scared Dustin. He took me to the ER of Oklahoma University Medical Center, where my papers were being put in for the transfer. Still being put in. One wonders why that's so damn difficult. So then two doctors saw her after she got more blood work. the two doctors concurred in their diagnosis that she needed a D&C, a dilation and curettage, that they needed to scrape out her uterus, not just to clear the fetus, but to clear out any cells that remained thereafter. And this is where it gets even stupider. An ultrasound tech overruled two actual fully educated physicians. The ultrasound tech said,
I hear a heartbeat.
Now, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that the so-called fetal heartbeats that the fetus fetishists, maggots, bark and grunt and bray and bleat about is not actually a heartbeat. It is an electronic impulse, because in most of these instances, the heart is not formed. So one is at pains to figure out how one has a heartbeat. Without a heart. So the blood test results came back. Her HCG was through the roof. That's a pregnancy hormone. And that's another diagnostic, differential diagnostic sign that the woman is dealing with a partial molar pregnancy. And by the way, the ultrasound tech who said, "I hear a heartbeat," or "I hear a heartbeat, praise Jesus," wasn't even an OB trained ultrasound tech. The ultrasound tech was just a floater. And that ultrasound tech stopped her treatment in its tracks. So then they transferred her from Oklahoma University Medical Center to Oklahoma Children's Hospital. And there, the ultrasound, performed by someone competent, showed that the fetus had gone from looking like a bean to looking like a stick. She said, and you could see the precancerous pockets all the way around. Then the doctors, different set of doctors this time, showed up again and said, you know what they said, "Well, there's nothing we can do. According to Oklahoma law, we can't even really touch you." She said they were giving me medicine every 30 minutes to help with my nausea, but said, "We can't keep you here just for nausea, and we can't even help you if you start bleeding again, unless it's a huge emergency." How is this not a huge emergency already? "Unless it's a huge emergency, unless you're crashing in front of us or your blood pressure goes up so high that you're having a heart attack, we can't help you." She wasn't sick enough to satisfy the dictates of a bunch of dirt, dumb Oklahoma maggot legislators. Rabia Mukadam from earlier said, "What's happened in Oklahoma is that doctors are extremely confused about what condition is bad enough to provide an abortion, and the effect of this confusion and chaos is combined with extraordinarily draconian penalties. So if a doctor makes the wrong decision, they could be subjected to a 5-year prison sentence or lose their medical license." Doctors are being put in this position of weighing their own liberty and safety against what should be patient-centered medical care and ethical medical care. And the result of that is that patients like JC will continue to suffer. Then they started trying to figure out a way to transfer her to either Kansas or Colorado or New Mexico, where women aren't entirely second-class citizens. This poor young woman. I was trying not to die. I was so out of it. I was hearing the words, but nothing was sticking. I just remember looking over at my husband, and his head was in his hands, and he was crying. "Why won't they help you?" he asked, to speak to the ethics board at the hospital, but his request was denied. And one thing stuck in her mind more than anything else. The doctor looking at her and saying, "The best advice we can give you is to go and sit in the parking lot until you bleed out, and we will be ready to help you when that happens." Ready to try to help, because bleed out is a pretty significant medical emergency. By that time, she could bleed out in the truck and not have enough life in her to get her back into the hospital from the parking lot. This is the work of Clarence Thomas. This is the work of Sammy Bad Breath Alito. This is the work of Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, of Brett Kavanaugh, and God knows the work of the precious handmaid. And the young couple was beside themselves. It was an hour to turn around and go back home, and if something happened then, they were screwed. But they also couldn't just sit there and park in the parking lot and wait for her to get literally to death's door. This obviously shouldn't happen. Finally, someone got her some relief at a clinic in Kansas, where voters went to the polls and said, "You damned well will not reduce women in Kansas to second-class citizens." So on a wing and a prayer, they drove to Kansas from Oklahoma. Kansas is directly north of Oklahoma. They drove 3 hours to Wichita. In Oklahoma, you have to meet with a counselor who tells you about the death of your precious little fetus and make sure that you feel horrible about it. But then the counselor went on to discuss all of the options and then took all the paperwork that she had brought with her and threw them in the trash. J.C. Statton said, "I asked her, 'Why did you throw the papers away? Don't I need them?' And she pulled a huge trash can out and said, 'I want you to look at this.' And it was completely full. She said, 'You're not alone. The whole trash can is filled with papers of other women that also did not have a choice.'" They finally took her back into the room for the procedure. "All the feelings finally caught up with me in there, and I cried," she said. "The doctor came in, the nurses came in, and they just sat with me and hugged me, held my hand, and assured me that it was okay. They told me, 'You're not making the wrong decision. If you don't do this, you're going to die.'" So now, she's alive. But again, thanks to our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, the precancerous tissue is growing again in her uterus. Her body was still making the tissue even after the non-viable fetus, the molar pregnancy, was removed from her because of how high her HCG levels were. And had she been treated at an appropriate time when she first went in, none of that would be happening now. And so she has to be monitored for basically an undefined long time to make sure that it hasn't turned into cancer. and the question of whether she can bear another child, a child that she and her husband would be happy to have. Is in doubt because of our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties. And so she and her husband have actually given up on the idea of having another baby. And so she's trying to schedule a tubal ligation to make sure she can't get pregnant again. She said, you know, if I was to get pregnant, I don't think I would be okay. After you have any type of molar pregnancy, you can have one again really easily. She said, before, Dustin and I were really ready. But now we can't imagine even the thought of going through anything like that again. When she never should have had to go through it in the first place. Except that the church's sacred teaching says that Jesus wanted that to happen to her. Thanks, Fappy. Thanks, George H.W. Bush, for nominating Fappy. Thanks, George W. Bush, for nominating old Balls and Strikes and Sammy Bad Breath. Thanks, Mitch McConnell, for making sure that it remained an 8-justice court and not even letting Merrick Garland have a hearing. Thanks, Moscow Mitch. Thanks, Nitwit Nero, who for years supported Planned Parenthood and abortion rights until it was no longer politically convenient to do so and appointed instead Ann's boy Neil and Brett Kavanaugh and, of course, the precious handmaid. Thanks. And JC and Dustin, y'all, I don't know how you've ever voted. I can't know. I shouldn't. But I can suggest that voting for Republicans is to vote to make it more likely that more people will go through what she went through. And that kind of dovetails with a couple of other stories. One, on MSNBC, I'm not going to bother with the clip or anything. On MSNBC, David Jolly, a former member of a former Republican member of Congress, and now having seen the light and gone independent, because Democrats turn into Republicans, but Republicans ever so seldom turn into Democrats. He did nonetheless say, there is one way to make sure that none of this crap ever happens again. And that is by making sure that we never elect another Republican. It wasn't with regard to this story. I don't even think it had anything to do with women's reproductive health. But that is a transferable truth. If we hope to ever have a reestablishment of the full rights and privileges of an American citizen to 52% of the population of this country, the only way to accomplish that is by never, ever, 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 ever again voting for a Republican. That may be too complicated for white voters in Mississippi Stan and Talabama and Tennessee and Kentucky Stan and Georgia Stan, Florida Stan, y'all dumbasses. Not our good Florida Horn family community, congregation members. You know who I'm talking about. If you're sick to death of showdowns over something as simple as raising the debt ceiling, the only way to make sure that that's not another facet in the culture war is to never elect another Republican. David Jolly is right. And one more story on this topic. Another woman who was forced to live in the grim shadow of death because pasty-faced, doughy old white men are worried about her precious, the women's precious fetuses, testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And she was from Texas. And she testified with tremendous, powerful, heartbreaking detail about how she would probably never be able to carry a child again after what happened to her when she had a non-viable pregnancy that Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton and the maggots of the Texas legislature and Matthew Kaczmarek, the federal judge, the maggot judge, she may never be able to carry a pregnancy to term again because of her, because of being forced to carry a non-viable pregnancy unto the door of death itself. And she addressed Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and John Cornholio, her two senators from Texas. Those chicken shits couldn't be bothered, however, to show up for that Senate hearing. And so they weren't there, but she called them out by name and told them that this was what they wanted. All those years and barking and grunting about the sacred sanctity of life and how little wads of tissue that looks like a bean are actual, real, live, no-kidding babies, even when they're not, or they don't have all their necessary organs to survive post-birth. And in the midst of it all, this heartbreaking testimony. Precious Lady G sat in his chair in the Senate Committee on the Judiciary Chambers and slept. Everything short of a little string of drool running down the corner of his mouth, he slept. Because her testimony didn't matter. She was only a woman trying to politicize a decision and statutes that are meant to protect life. Just not hers, right? Good God. Think back to how this program began. And how everything sort of folded upon itself, naturally sort of unfurled. Well, that's because leaving dirty, corrupt, crooked as a dog's hind leg justices on the Supreme Court bench has consequences. Far-reaching consequences. And there is not a damn thing we can do about it. The only person who can do a damn thing about Vappy Thomas is Merrick Garland. And I feel like a grasshopper out on a really, really thin stalk of grass that really can't support that hope. We can't help you. Emilio writes, I think doctors should start to disobey those laws. They should go ahead with the medical care and then claim that the woman's health was in danger because it was. I'm channeling Gandhi's salt march. Highly immoral laws should not be followed. Well, the thing about Gandhi, Emilio, and he understood this better than anyone else, was that he was dealing with a colonial regime that could, in fact, be shamed. I mean, the British Empire. You cannot shame a maggot. And the multimillionaire for-profit media would cover wall-to-wall the press conference of the prosecuting attorney or the attorney general who said, we are here to prosecute this obvious murderous doctor who took a tiny, precious life as though it were nothing. Mr. Attorney General, the baby didn't have a brain. Well, it might have growed one. It might have been a miracle. Jesus might have reached right up there into her hoo-hoo and put a brain in right at the last minute. Who's a doctor to say that can't happen when we are an office of believers? Whew. Tell me I'm wrong. Because I don't think I'm wrong. Kim in New York. Hi, Kim. What have we become? Kim says, I seem to email you when I'm outraged, which is like every other day. Today, though, I'm more than outraged. I just finished an article in the Times about the murder of Jordan Neely on the New York subway, and the majority of the comments were from people making excuses for the former Marine who put him in a chokehold and snuffed the life out of him. Capital punishment for the crime of being severely mentally ill. A sample of one of the comments. I applaud this. Citizens no longer cowering like frightened children in the face of criminals. Or should we just wait for this homeless guy to kill someone first? The system had plenty of chances to deal with him, and tens of thousands like him, and failed miserably. Sorry, but now it's in the hands of the citizens. Enough is enough. Society needs law and order instead of the legions of bureaucrats who work for the city and do nothing. Put them on the trains and make them ride up and down, keeping the tax-paying public safe. Kim asks, what kind of callous society have we become? The disregard for the humanity of this poor, ill, and troubled man makes me weep tears of anger. Yeah, righteous fury, Kim. I had Jordan Neely on the list for this evening. And I, too, have seen some of this ugliness. For some reason or another, I think I know what it is, Leon Scum has decided that every time I open my app, you know which one, that I should see the latest tweet from Matt Pubeface Walsh. And he has been barking and grunting and, frankly, dancing and joyously celebrating the Marine who choked Jordan Neely to death. Jordan Neely was starving. Jordan Neely was probably dehydrated. When he got on the train screaming, reports indicate that what he was doing was begging for food and water. And he was profoundly mentally ill. He had, yes, a long string of arrests, which he had survived. but he could not survive one member of the United States Marine Corps who was reported to be between deployments. Kim, I don't know if he was a former Marine or if he was still active duty. But hoo-ah! He took it upon himself to use his superior strength and training to subdue Jordan Neely by putting him in a chokehold that is actually illegal for most police to use and certainly illegal for cops to use in New York. And he did, in fact, kill Jordan Neely dead for the crime of yelling and the crime of being hungry and the crime of being thirsty. I was naked and you clothed me not. I had no place to live and you offered me no shelter. I was sick and you did not treat me. If you've done it unto the least of the one of these, my brothers, you've done it unto me. So, the hero Marine that's being lionized up one wall and down the other and is the latest homicidal hero du jour of the sick, psychotic, vicious right wing in this country. Well, if we are to believe Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, well, that Marine choked Jesus to death on that train. Isn't that what Matthew 25 says? Pretty sure that's what Matthew 25 says. And so here we are, about 18 minutes before the beginning of the second hour of the program. Thank you so much, Christopher. Christopher got us started on fundraising this evening. All I have to say is, and thanks. Well, let me concur in your, Christopher, and thank you. Thank you for helping to keep all of this going. Thank you. So we are now down to $540 to go in our fundraising goal in a mad sprint to pay off the stress line bill for this evening. We really need to knock out a substantial chunk of that if it's at all humanly possible. This is my second mention of fundraising in the program this evening, twice in 102 minutes. That's an awful lot. This program's almost become a GoFundMe for me. Actually, there's a more or less inactive GoFundMe. Never mind, I'm being a bitch. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you. And back to medical records and Fappy. Theo said, you're entirely correct, Robin. Heya, by the way. Hey, Theo. Having worked in medical insurance and handled confidential medical docs, I and co-workers were indeed held to a much higher standard of responsibility than Mr. Justice Fappy ever has been on the court. I, in fact, risked getting fired for even peripherally passing along medical details of the then-growing AIDS-HIV epidemic to at-risk friends. No names mentioned, no actionable details included, just the best the doctors were finding out. But anger overcame my innate caution and fear of unemployment. John in Central PA says, subject line, Andrew Gillum. I'm just tuning in, so I don't know if you saw it or not, but Andrew Gillum was found not guilty today. I missed that one. I was all caught up in Proud Boys. And good. That prosecution was dirty from jump. Andrew Gillum was found not guilty today. To that I say, fuck you, Merrick Garland, you feckless douchebag. And then Cynthia in the Bay Area, hi Cynthia, said, I just saw this on CNN as I passed by my computer. North Carolina is about to pass a veto-proof abortion ban. Goes right along with the story you just told. Women are going to needlessly die. As far as I'm concerned, it's a form of murder. Too bad these Repiglicon bastards won't be charged with it. Too bad it won't happen to them.
But then again, they're well-to-do. Even if some maggot female legislator finds herself
inconveniently pregnant, maybe from, I don't know, romping with a maggot legislator who isn't her Christian family, biblical family values, one man and one woman husband. Well, she'll just get on a plane, fly to New York or New Mexico or Kansas or Illinois or Massachusetts. Yeah, California, really. I mean, if you're a maggot female member of the reasonably well-to-do in Alabama, you're either going to go to New York or you're going to go to Beverly Hills, you know, L.A. Do a little shopping. Do a little shopping. When you get your shopping done, you go, you get your little problem taken care of. You go back to a nice hotel, wait for a couple of days, get one more shopping trip in, have all that shit shipped. You don't want to take it with you on the plane. And then just fly back home and you don't have a little problem no more. For J.C. Statton in Oklahoma Stan, it's a different story. And you know, the thing is, J.C. Statton didn't go to the ER trying to not be pregnant anymore. She went there hoping she could keep her baby. No. Eventually wound up in Kansas. That story about the garbage can full of medical paperwork reminded me of something from my past. It has nothing to do with reproduction. But I remember when this was during the Clinton administration. And I remember when there was a 7-day waiting period on buying a firearm, handgun. And there would have to be a background check run. And the background check would be returned to the sheriff of the given county. Well, in the little West Virginia county where I lived at the time, the fax machine, they had a dedicated fax machine for the background reports, background checks. And the output of that fax machine was set up in such a way that its output simply fell straight into a garbage can. Damn Democrats trying to keep decent law-abiding people from buying guns. We just let it go in the trash. It don't matter. I want to examine at greater length this idea that popped into my little blonde noggin during the program yesterday about constructive secession. I think I've landed on something. Well, no, I really have, if in 2-3 weeks, a month from now, they're babbling about it over on my filthy morning habit. Or one of the other multimillionaire for-profit media shows. I'm not going to do it right now, but just kind of... The maggot states are effectively seceding from the United States by creating a series of hateful laws that make it impossible for a significant portion of the population of decent states to ever feel safe going there. Persons of color, women, gay folk, lesbians, bisexuals, queer questioning. And yeah, hey, look,
It's the first mention of transness, and we are 110. No, we are. Yeah, 110 minutes into the program. That may be a record. Yay me. I just had, and they came in one right after the other. Thank you so much to Darlene in Connecticut. $50 challenge on the table. And thank you to Ralph's. I'm offering a $25 challenge in honor of Andy Borowitz's latest article about Ginsurrectionist Thomas. If you can send me a link, send me a link. Thanks, Ralph. So there's $75 in challenge money on the table. That will double $75 that come in, you know, 7.5 people at $10, et cetera. One person at 75. And that would get us down to, where were we? That would get us down to 370. $370 to go. We'd be $70 away from fully funded for yesterday. Thank you so much, Darlene, and thank you, Ralphs. Thanks for all you do to help keep all of this going. And hopefully folks will chip in on that, and we'll still have a... oh, I must have missed it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ralphs. A lot of email comes in over the course of... I will go and find it. But hopefully, we'll still have a stress line tomorrow. You'll find out by the end of the program. Subject line, Kim's email. Steve in New York said, and Kim's in New York too, I will guarantee you that the person who wrote that comment doesn't even live here in New York City. Bureaucrats do ride the subway. Last week I saw a woman who had what seemed to me to be schizophrenia. She walked down the street screaming and yelling at the top of her lungs. No, she didn't hurt anyone. Robin, she needed help. She needed to be under medical care. I guarantee you that Mr. Neely would not have touched or harmed anyone. I've seen countless people who scream and rant and, yes, talk to people who aren't there. They never touch anyone. I guarantee the people applauding this murderer don't live here and are the ones saying that crime is out of control in New York City and other large cities. Hell, the murderer doesn't live here either. He lives in Long Island. When one lives in New York or any other big city, one takes it as written that when one lives among millions of people, one will come across all kinds of people. When one lives in a big city, one realizes that the odds are the more people, the more likely there are to be people like Mr. Neely. We also realize exactly what I wrote above. These folks don't hurt people. They don't need violence or some Marine Corps small dick douche nozzle vigilante out to prove his manhood. Yeah, we don't know dude's name yet. Let's just call him Bernie Getz. You're probably right, Steve. Because God knows, like I said, there are people all over this country like, hell yeah, he choked him out, choked him to death, didn't even give him a chance to tap out. It is disgusting and horrifying. It's interesting you had mentioned that. I was talking about that very thing the other day. Steve also suggests, at this point in time, we need a green book for LGBTQ plus folks, the rainbow book. It occurs to me that someone needs to put together a green book for LGBTQ plus travel throughout this country. Well, in that case, you just draw a picture. You just take a map of the United States and you start planting Confederate flags on Talabama and Tennessee and Kentucky stand, Georgia stand, North Carolina stand, South Carolina stand, Florida stand, Mississippi stand, Arkansas stand, Texas stand, Oklahoma stand, Arizona stand, Idaho stand, Montana stan, North Dakota stan, South Dakota stan, Wyoming stan, Iowa stan, Missouri stan, Kansas stan, Talibandiana, New Hampshire stan, and then everything else is pretty much okay. Sometimes I just hate that, the way I think. No, Clarence, I missed this latest outbreak of freedom. Thanks for sending that along. From 11 Alive in Georgia, the story is out of Moultrie, Georgia. Know where that is. The shooter killed his mother and grandmother at two neighboring homes and then killed a woman at McDonald's in downtown Moultrie. That happened today in rural South Georgia. He murdered those three people before he, as they used to say, saved the good people of whatever county that is, the cost of a trial, and unalived himself. Georgia Bureau of Investigation, not the cleanest of organizations. See what they did relative to Cop City. GBI Special Agent in Charge Jamie Steinberg wrote an email saying, "We are working to learn more information and track down some additional witnesses." And the McDonald's worker who was murdered was the early morning manager. The killer had at one point in time been an employee at that McDonald's. It appeared that he had murdered the woman when she unlocked the door to let him in for an early morning shift. Because freedom. Wolverines! I'm sorry. I shouldn't do that. Who we are.
This is not who we are.
Yes, it fucking is. Because every owner of a firearm has within them the potential to become a monster. Every last one. Because you can't purchase a firearm without at least thinking about what would happen if you had to use it. And then that begins a process of, well, would I do it then? 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 And for all too many people lately, the list of what when you would do it is not short. Then there's what happened this past Monday in Maryland when three teenagers wearing masks got on a school bus and tried to waste a 14-year-old student, tried to shoot him in the head, but the gun misfired. When the gun didn't fire, the attackers resorted to physically beating the student, and then they ran away. Martin Diggs is the head of the local bus drivers union. He said this was an attempted murder, plain and simple. Call it what it is. They pulled the trigger three times, but for some reason, by the grace of God, the gun didn't go off and bullets flew out of the gun. It was all caught on video. This happened in Prince George's County, Maryland. Speaking to Fox 5 DC, the victim's mama said, "They tried to kill my son three times and they failed. And you know what I would say to them? You're cowards. You're going to forever be a coward. You're not going to have any good luck and you will get caught." Marka. So, we are at the beginning of the third hour of the program. $75 worth of challenge money on the table. No responses yet. I hope that doesn't remain the case. And let's go over to the stress line, see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Well, nothing, just, you know, listening to you and, you know, trying to figure out where do we start? Do we start with, you know, the mentally disabled young man who was murdered because he was hungry and unhoused, and he just said, "I'm tired." It's like there's so many people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. I mean, if we spent more money on figuring, you know, I don't know, making affordable housing or, you know, rent subsidies and, I don't know, help for people who are in desperate need of mental health care, maybe we would have people being murdered. But then again, the hell is going to be people like the unnamed white guy who took it upon himself to someone because he was being annoyed. The guy was getting on his nerves because, you know, he was expressing what was happening with him at the moment. He was unarmed. He hadn't approached anybody. There was nothing. There just so happened to be a reporter on the train witnessing all this and who recorded everything that was going on.
That's the thing. It is so... It's so viscerally horrifying to watch in a real-time recording of a man being murdered.
Right. See, I'm not going to watch it, just like I didn't watch the George Floyd video. I refuse to watch anything that harms black bodies. It is traumatic enough just being me in this country. That I do not need to add to my trauma. I am, you know, the trauma porn and the constant replaying of these videos over and over again for the, you know, to help people with, you know, for the ratings and the clickbait and just to get people's eyes on pages. I refuse to participate in that process. I won't do it. And let me tell you, when I heard about, because I heard about it this morning, you know, because like I listened to KNX 1070 for a track report, and they reported on it. And the way they reported it was that this, you know, he was out of control, he was attacking people, and this young man, this hero, you know, probably saved lives on this New York City subway. And like, you know, I live in a big city. I live in LA and we actually have a subway. And there's been a spike in violence, unfortunately. But then again, it depends on who's reporting it. And I want to, because again, you know, we're thanking folks here, the Horn family community. And we don't just take, we don't fall for the okie doke. You know, we need data. It's like, so what do you consider a spike? And, you know, you got to consider the source. And I'm not denying that there's been, you know, there's been trouble and there's been a murder, or I think there's been a couple of murders on the red line here in LA. But usually when they start hyping it up, it's usually somebody from the cabal or the cartel called the police union, you know, also known as the police union out here, to be able to get funds, you know, to increase their funding for, you know, the furthering militarization of LAPD. That part. But when I think about that young man, I think of Trayvon Martin. Now, of course, Trayvon Martin was just a young black man minding his own business, walking in his neighborhood and not bothering anybody. And yes, this young man was having, you know, a mental episode. Yet he wasn't bothering anybody. He wasn't a threat. And like Stephen New York said, anybody that lives in a large city knows this is going to happen. At the time, they do not bother people. They, you know, they go through their episodes and they go about their business. And that's it. This was a young man that was 30 years old. He was somebody's child. And then apparently he's been in suffering since about 2007 because his mother was murdered by a boyfriend and her body was stuffed in a suitcase in the Bronx, and this left him somewhere in the Bronx. Now, do you think he got any counseling after that happened?
Probably no.
So do you think that might have, exasperated? He might not have even had mental health issues, or there might have been some underlying thing. But if he did not get the counseling and the help that he needed when his mother was brutally murdered, and actually the person that did it actually went to jail, caught him, and he went on trial. I think he was convicted in 2015 or something like that. But the bottom line is, this baby, this young man, who was basically only 5 years younger than my son, who just turned 35 on Monday, that could have been my child. And as it's hard enough as a black mother, I mean, my son Alex doesn't live with me anymore, so I don't know his comings and goings anymore. But when he was living at home, I could not really breathe until he came home. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but the day after GOAT 45 elected, some Trump supporter walked up to my son, and he was sitting in his car minding his own business, and socked and slapped and hit him, whatever, and went about their business like it was nothing. So ever since then, and even before then, but you ask any mother that is the mother, black mother, a mother of a black son, we hold our breath until our sons come home. And now it's even our daughters as well, but it's mostly our sons. So when I think about what this is like, you know, because even though his mother was was murdered, his father's still alive. He has family that's still alive. And it's hard enough, you know, and I know what it's like to deal with a family member who is unhoused and is in desperate, you know, and has the dual thing of mental health issues and drug addiction. I don't know if the young man had a drug issue. That is not my business if he did. But I know what it was like with my sister. And no matter how much help you try to give them, until they're ready to get their help, there's nothing you can do. And trying to get them help, or even that they're even at that point where they want to get help. And then if they want to get help, trying to find the services that they need, that they could afford to take advantage of. Because chances are they're not there. So when I hear these people saying, good on them, and that, you know, we're tired of, you know, we're going to have to take it into our own hands. The only people who are going to suffer and this is going to affect are BIPOC people, and especially black people. Not to say that this would not happen to if that young man was white and unhoused. But chances are, I doubt if a white guy, if anything would have happened, I doubt if they would have put a white man in a chokehold. they might have subdued him and, you know, taken him off the train or what have you, and waited for and called the police. But again, he was not a threat. And again, he has not been arrested. They questioned him and let him go. No charges have been filed. And then they talk about, well, he's been arrested, oh, you know, dozens and dozens of times. Yeah, but did the fool that choked the life out of him know that? No, he did not. And I don't know what the arrests were for. Obviously, they were probably misdemeanors because he was let go. He did not pose a threat to anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm just sick of,
I mean, he was apparently, you know, back in the aughts, he was a...
Right, before his mother was murdered.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson impersonator.
Yeah, and a brilliant one.
And a damn good one. Oh, my gosh.
And he would perform in Times Square. I'd rather have watched him than the Naked Cowboy.
Jesus. Thank you for bringing him up. I completely forgotten about him. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And now, you know, when it's best time of the day and we're, I don't know, maybe I'll fire, that sounds fun. Let's fire up Midnight Cowboy.
Oof. Can you believe that movie? Didn't that movie get an X rating back in the day?
It may have. Yeah.
I think it did.
Well, you know, it kind of mentioned homosexuality.
Yeah. So he was a gigolo, you know, and he had sexual relations with people of the same gender. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't have that. That's an abomination.
Oh, Lordy, that term.
Because we, you know, that's an abomination. I'm just...
Makes Jesus cry.
You know, this, it just, you know, breaks my heart. And Jesus, you know, he's crying up there about all these gay folks and all this and these transgenders. And they're just defiling the country, our Christ-loving country. And we got to do something about that. So we're going to make sure we got these laws, you know, to make sure that we know who's going in and out the potty, because, you know, we got to worry about that. And we're going to make it illegal for you know, those drag queens, those female impersonators. Mm-hmm. Because, see, you know,
I don't know how I feel when you channel your inner redneck girl.
That is kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot scary.
And I said, isn't it?
In it?
But am I in it?
Yeah, actually, if you were a true redneck, it'd be, ain't it?
Ain't it? Okay. Ain't yeah. it? Ain't it?
Ain't it? Ain't it?
Ain't it? Ain't it?
Yeah.
See, you know.
But I do love this. The totally separate topic, but at least it takes place in New York. It was another day of the E. Jean Carroll civil suit against Nitwit Nero today.
Woo!
And
should I get my popcorn ready and my glass of red wine?
I don't know. Maybe a couple of edibles. What? You know. I know you can't do that.
I can't do that. Remember, I get tested.
Yeah. But today, the jury got to watch Nitwit Nero's deposition video.
Oh, sis. Do tell.
And they queued it up to the place where the lawyers showed him a picture of he and E. Jean Carroll and Carroll's ex-husband back in the 80s. Nitwit Nero looked at the photo and went,
yeah, that's Marla. Yeah, that's my wife.
No.
Yeah.
From the Department of Not My Type.
Quit playing.
No, no. Yeah. And so, counsel for the parking garage, Alina Haba Haba Haba, said to, no, that's Carol. And Nitwit Nira says,
oh, well, yeah, the photo is very blurry. It's definitely blurry. Believe me, it's blurry.
It's blurry. Sweet black baby Jesus, my God.
And so, in order to avoid...
You cannot make this crap up. Oh, my God.
No. I mean, this is Rock Gut Tequila and Swirly Straw territory. He's been out of the country touring his golf properties in Scotland and Ireland.
Ones that they didn't want to have in Scotland?
Yeah. Our pal Claire across the pond sent me a photo of the wonderful woman who years ago posed with a sign that said Trump's a cunt, because it means different things over there, different usage.
Right.
And so with him back there now, somebody made a sign and brought it to her and took a picture of her and said Trump is still a cunt. I love that. He's been in Scotland and Ireland. Now all of a sudden, he talked to reporters today and said,
I'm going back to New York. You know, I'm being sued there. There's a trial going on. I'll probably attend.
And then doubling down, he
probably
said,
attend?
Because remember, he's being sued in the first place, not necessarily because of the rape, but because he defamed her and called her a liar when she talked about it. And he said she was a fake and that it was all made up. And so today he doubled down and said,
she's a fake. It's a disgrace.
Do.
I'll probably appear at the trial. I'll probably attend.
So do, you know, please.
You just got an RSVP thing, buddy.
And all the way through the deposition, he kept calling her
a whack job. She's sick. She's a sick person, in my opinion. Really sick. There's something wrong with her.
Sounds like a typical attack on a raped woman.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's all, you know, blame the victim. What did she have on? How were you, you know, how much did she have to drink? Where were you? You know. But if you went up to his hotel room, you should have known what he wanted. And you know, if I decided, I went up to a man's hotel room and I'm like, you know what? I'm not feeling this. I have the right to say no. I have the right to change my mind. You know, that no means yes for crap. Come on. That's so last century. And see, when you talk about let's make America great again, these are the things that they want, you know, to bring back. You know, a woman getting pregnant and not being able to, you know, have an abortion. You know, back then there's no such thing as state rape. There's, you know, I don't know. I can't even vote. You know, these are the things that they want. I would not be allowed to live in Encino. I would not be allowed to marry my wife. I would not be allowed.
And that's the world that Fappy Thomas wants you to go back to.
Right. And bruh, it's like, bruh, when they come for me, they're going to come for you too.
No, he's got money and power and prestige.
He's got that billionaire.
And he's got him and a billion, right. And no, he doesn't have a billionaire. A billionaire has him.
Yeah, that's true. And he is their house boy. He is, and I'm trying not to go there, but I'm just thinking House Negro, Porch Monkey, Uncle Tom, just as he, you know, that internalized racism, that self-loathing.
Well, I think by his own admission, he is a self-hating black man. By his own admission.
Yes. Own admission. You know, when he got into, you know, where did he go to law school? Is it Yale?
Yes.
With affirmative action, because of affirmative action.
Yes.
And now he got in. Now he wants to pull the ladder up so nobody else.
Well, but that's not all. The thing with him is he said, he says that getting in under affirmative action degraded his Yale law degree.
Degraded, yeah. And this is, again, it's like, bruh, just because they let you in didn't mean that they didn't try to kick you out. So apparently you did well enough that you, I mean, last time I checked, it's not like, Yale law is the, you know, draw of Stephen Morrow.
Draws,
the picture of the turtle
monkey
on the back of the matchstick.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that's what Jim Jacketoff Jordan went to the Draw Spunky School of Law.
Okay. And yes, you may have gotten in because of affirmative action, buddy, but you did not get to stay because of affirmative action.
No, he got in because of affirmative action, but he got out on his own merits.
On his own merits, that's what I'm saying. That just, you know, again, I have my own issues with self-loathing and internalized racism and all that because of my skin color, because of my hair, all that. White supremacy ain't no joke. It is not.
Yeah, neither is the patriarchy.
With all of that, right. And it's like when all is said and done, as much as I hated myself at times, never did I hate myself enough to ever, 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 ever. If it's in the back, in the chief seat, never in the fucking million years would I have ever thought about voting Republican. And this is, you know, even though I was not very politically astute back in the day, but I knew enough that I'm like, there's something wrong with these people. And I mean, like I said, it wasn't like I am now where I research and I check out what people are talking about and I weigh, you know, candidates and blah, 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 blah. You know, but when I was, you know, my first time voting, the only thing I could think of, and, you know, because of my upbringing and stuff as a black person, is like my family. People in my family and my elders and my ancestors fought, bled, and died to fight for my right as a black woman to vote. And since then, I have never missed an election. Even now, even more so now, that because I live in the great state of California, you know, the one of civilized states, that everybody now gets a mail-in ballot. So you have the choice. You can, you know, mail in your ballot, or you can take your ballot to any number of the yellow drop boxes that are typically in front of parks or in front of libraries throughout the county of Los Angeles and drop off your ballot. Or you could take it, if you want, you can go to a polling place if you actually want to do that. Or you can actually go to the polling place and drop off your ballot. And it doesn't, see, back in the day, you could only go to the polling place in your neighborhood. But you don't have to do that anymore. That part. They make it so that you don't have, there's not an issue with voting because, again, I live in California. So, I just, When I look at black people like, you know, Uncle Thomas and Candace Owens and Jesse Lynn Peterson and what is his name? E.W. Jackson?
We haven't heard of old E-Dub in a while.
Yeah, we haven't heard of E-Dub in a while. I hope I didn't just raise his, you know, raise his ass up.
I don't know.
And he, Larry you Elder.
Know, you know, he might have... reckon maybe he got the Rona?
Oh, it seems like he did. E.W. Jackson. Was he an anti-vaxxer?
Pretty sure.
I wouldn't be. He has to be. He would have to be because of his of who he of his clan, of who he hangs with. People like that.
Probably
like,
not the best,
you know,
word choice to say clan.
Well, you know, we could he could be like the Dave Chappelle skit of the blind black man who thought, you know, he was a white man. No, I use the right word, clan. I could use another word that begins with a C and ends with an N. That part. I just, these people. Oh, so, you know, this morning when I was talking to you and I was telling you the plight of my car that we spent, or the taxi, that we spent $4,000, over $4,000 getting onto the catalytic converter replaced, but I told you it was still shaking like a motherfucker. Yeah. I took the car to the mechanic, and he's like, well, the good news is the code for the catalytic converter isn't working, you know, isn't popping up anymore. That, you know, and I'm like, okay. He's like, but there's something, let's just say, long story short, today cost me another $600.
Beautiful.
So we have, over the course of 2 days, have spent 5,000, count it. One, two, three, four, $5,000 on my car. Have I mentioned that Jan is still hasn't gotten her unemployment yet? Good news is she has a phone interview on Monday, so that should start, you know, get that going. And she finally got to the Social Security. And that's probably, you know, so we milled in the forms for that. And that's going to probably take at least, hopefully, no more than, you know, hopefully 30 days for more than likely 60. So we got all this money going out. But nothing really coming in right now. And it's just like, but on a happy note, I was found out that I'm eligible for Department of Rehabilitation, and I have for them to pay for the last $15,000 of my master's program. And I have a phone interview with them on Tuesday. So fingers crossed, toes crossed. Thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thoughts and prayers.
And we have an update. Lee in New York. Uh-oh. And Ralph's both serving as the Horn Ad Hoc E.W. Jackson Research Department. Lee says he's not dead yet, Jim, or Robin. And Ralph sent me the Wikipedia entry. We just haven't heard from him in a while.
No, it's no love lost there. I was just naming, you know, self-loathing black people. Oh, Colin Noir. Whatever that boy's name is.
Candy O. Ben Dry Wife Shapiro in Blackface Drag.
In Blackface. Blackface Drag. With a really bad, it's like, girl, if you want to be on national TV and talking about people, get something done with that mop on top of your head. It's like, mm-mm-mm. And I don't, you know, and God help me, I don't like talking, you know, calling out black women and their appearance, especially when it comes to our hair. But she doesn't count. Because she doesn't consider it, you know, it's like OJ. I'm not black, I'm OJ. And so her thing is, I'm not black, I'm San Diego. So it's like, I'm tired, Robert. I'm tired of the hatred. I'm tired of the cruelty, just to be cruel. This is just, it is so, so very unnecessary. And it's just, I just want people to understand the level of cruelty and how, I just, like you said earlier about Gandhi, about, you know, the colonialism and whatnot, those people can be shamed. These people cannot be shamed, sis. By the way, I just saw a picture, okay, again, I don't like calling out women, but I just saw a picture of our favorite senator from Arizona, and she had on this silver dress. What was that? Okay, never mind.
You're talking about Curtsy and Kirsty?
Yes. It looks like. Okay, can I stop? Nope. I'm not gonna do it. 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 But I was like, oh, so this is what we wear to work every day. Okay. You do you, boo. You do you. But on a happy note, another happy note, I'm doing okay in school. Even though when I did, me and two other black women stated our grievances to our professor, we were called hostile by a young Latina class cohort mate. And when we called her out about it, because the following week, she said, I can't be here, it's just too hostile. And she bounced out of the class. I didn't see what she wrote. And so last week, I put on my, you know, my best colonizer voice, you know, so as to not to upset, you know, people, because, you know, when black women speak out, because we're not allowed to have emotion. We're not allowed to express our opinion. We have, because we don't want to make, because we can't make people uncomfortable, you know, like Jordan Neely made these people on the train uncomfortable. Because if we make people uncomfortable, it could literally cost us our lives. But see, the thing is, I'm on Zoom. So, you know, and so the following week, this last week, my professor was talking about because it's applied leadership, and he was talking about, you know, leadership traits and about, you know, sometimes you have emotions and blah, blah, blah. And I said, Professor, that is the perfect segue, because, again, I wasn't going to try to say anything, but you know me. And so I said, so, Professor, did you feel that you last week when me and two other black women had this discussion about our grievances for the class and whatnot and so forth, did you feel like you were being attacked? He's like, actually, no. I felt that it was constructive and I would try to do better. I said, okay, next question. Did you feel like that we were being hostile? He's like, not at all. I said, because I had a classmate, and I didn't call out her name, but she knew who the fuck she was, in the Zoom chat, call us out and said that they, you know, that it was the discussion was hostile and she had to leave. And I said, I just want you to realize, I have a few things to say to that. I said, when you call a situation and black women are not, you know, are not only advocating for ourselves, but for other people, and we are deemed as hostile, That is anti-black, and that is the misogynoir. And for those of my classmates that do not know what that means, I'll put the definition in the Zoom chat. I said, you're messing with it. I am a grown woman. And how dare you? If you have a problem with anything that I have said or done, and if I have offended you in any shape, form, or fashion, then come to me and talk to me or any of the other black women. But for you to call us hostile, I said, that is just, I'm tired of that label. I am so tired of when black women speak up and voice our views. You're being too loud. You're being too emotional. You're overreacting. That shit has got to end. And especially if you're in a master's program that is diverse community development leadership. And if you have these anti-black views, how do you plan on working with diverse communities that are not yours? Yeah, that part. And of course, I gave them an opportunity to get it. If you have a problem, voice your views. And if I did upset you in any way, let me know and we can have a discussion. Of course they didn't. So it's these things that we as black women have to, like today, I finally got a psychiatrist. Because I haven't had my meds in a while, almost a year, because it's been very difficult to find, because of with all the stuff that's with, COVID and all this, we are in the middle of a mental health crisis in this country. And there's not enough doctors, especially, psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, there's not enough people to meet the need. So I had a phone appointment with my new psychiatrist. And first of all, she was trying to overtalk me. She was talking really quickly. And I'm like, I'm to say to you, are you bipolar? Because she was, and when I was telling her the medication that I was on and what worked for me and what didn't, because I need stuff like, I need Adderall. I need something to help me focus. Well, that's counterintuitive and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, listen to what I'm saying to you. She said, because I'm an expert. I said, you may be an expert in your medical field and you may have a lot of information and book learning, but I am a 56-year-old woman and I know what works for me. How dare you tell me what doesn't?
Hey, no kidding. Hey, Tracy, I don't know if it's your Bluetooth or, but a lot of noise.
I don't know what is going on.
It drowns you out.
Is this better?
Might be.
Huh? Okay. I don't know what it is about this freaking money for a Bose Bluetooth. And you're the second person.
Okay, so it's not just because it's broadcast. No, it's. I had an email. Had an email a minute ago. Said, "Who's the ghost with Tracy?" Because that's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Well, that's fucking annoying. I am so sorry.
Oh, don't apologize.
But
It's weird. You were good. You were good. You were good, and then. Snowstorm.
Maybe because of where I was going through or something, who knows. I don't know, is anybody having any of the core family having problems with AT&T or on their iPhones? Because I have been having so many issues lately with my iPhone, or I don't know if it's my iPhone, I don't know if it's the network. I do not know.
Well, my iPhone is ancient, and it's a hot mess.
So So when we finally got the whole medication thing, she asked me the name of my pharmacy. And so the pharmacy out here is called Alto. And I'm really loving these people because not only do they search for the best pricing, they deliver. There's one less thing that I have to deal with over the course of my day. So I gave her the name of the pharmacy, and then she calls me back and says, well, you know, that pharmacy doesn't come up on our, I said, look, at this point, I'm already tired. I'm already stressed out. And I said, look, I've been dealing with this pharmacy now for the last 6 months. With the way my life is going right now, I don't need any extra stress in my life. She's like, well, it's not coming on our drop-down list. I said, there has to be somebody in that office. I said, I know you are new, but there has to be somebody. It's because you can't see it. I said, don't tell me what you can't do. Tell me what you won't do. And it sounds like you don't want to do this. Do me a favor. Find somebody in that office, because I'm pretty sure they can help you put that pharmacy in your database. And then she kept talking. I said, you are stressing me out. And you're supposed to be my psychiatrist. And we've only had one session. And you are already stressing me out. Isn't that counterintuitive? Is that not what you're not supposed to do? Could you just find out? And if you can't, because she's like, well, isn't there another pharmacy? I said, yes, there's plenty of pharmacies. But this is the pharmacy that I want to deal with. And guess what? She's like, okay. So a couple of minutes later, I got a text message from my pharmacy saying that my medication was being prepared. And so, again, the advocate, you know, I have spent my entire life, well, not my entire life, but at least the last since we've met, finally advocating not only for myself and for others. This is my life calling. This is why I'm going into a master's program. Because all this work that I have been doing on the behalf of other people has been unpaid work. So the system needs to get paid, okay? So this is what I'm going to be doing. This, you know, it's all about, you know, it's DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So now it's JEDI, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Because you can't have, if you don't have justice, none of the other stuff is going to work either. You can't have one without the other.
Well, that's
true. Especially when it comes to justice.
Well, I got, closing in on the close of the program, and I just need to note that we've got $75 of challenge money out there, and it is so far unresponded to. So if anybody would like to, it's great. Otherwise, there's every likelihood the stress line won't be there tomorrow. This is the ongoing struggle. Yeah.
This is, again, I years. Whenever I could, I would contribute. But right now, only thing I can do right now is buy $10 a month.
Yeah, no, you're. And I understand. I'm not talking about you.
No, but what I'm going to say is, y'all, come on. I am tired of every day Robin having to beg for help. She would rather spend the entire 3 hours talking about the issues and the things that we tune into every day to hear about. But if she has, you know, she's on a flow on different, you know, on whatever topic she's discussing over that evening, and then she has to stop to say, we got a $75 challenge. Can you guys please? Because that's $150. That's part of a light bill. That's part of her comfort bill. That's grocery. That's whatever it takes. And I heard some people have said some awful things about the money that she's trying to raise to, you know, for her lifestyle. What the entire fuck? lifestyle? Really? So when she was Bob Kincaid, she was taking care of, he was a hard-working man taking care of his family. But now that she's Robin, oh, she's just, you know, spending her money on manicures and getting her hair did. Fuck that shit.
God, getting her hair did.
Huh?
I said, just the way you said, and getting her hair did. Oh, I need my hair dead, but, and all but four nails have popped off, but the fact of the matter is right now, Appalachian Power and Verizon are getting every damn nickel that comes in. So, yeah.
That part. And I'm just tired. It's no different for single mothers who get the same, you know, who get paid less for doing more work than men, because, you know, men got to get paid more because they take care of the family. But what about single mamas? What? We don't need money to take care of our children, especially when the person that fathered said, baby, said, well, bitch, I'm out. And you don't want it to be on the welfare or the government role. You know, so when we try to work and go to school or do whatever we have to do, and then we try to take care of our children, and then y'all get mad because we want equal pay for equal work. So I'm just trying to understand, because see, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But just because Robin no longer has a penis, does that mean she no longer needs to take care of her family? Yeah, I said it. Does that make her less of a person? Because to my mind, she is not only a woman, she is taking on, she gave up her privilege as a man to become who she, her authentic fucking self. And for you people.
No, it wasn't you people. It was just one.
No, I'm just saying anybody that has anything to say different, shame on you. Shame on you. How dare you? You know, what she's going through now is no, you know, other than the fact that I didn't have surgery, but when I decided to become my authentic self when I fell in love with her. Well, I didn't decide it happened. What I did decide was to live my truth and not live in fear. I lost friends. I lost family. But I'm the same person. Just because, I'm not going to go there. But just because I have sexual relations with a person of the same gender that I am, I'm still Tracy. Who I am. I'm now happier.
Maybe more than you ever were before.
That part. And, you know, Robin and I have conversations off air. The conversations that we have mostly center around is what is the hell that she's going through, and, you know, and actually living it can. You know, living in a state that at any given moment can make her. And knowing all of this, she is still happier than she's ever been in her life, because she is who she's supposed to be. And if you can't get that in your head again, that's your problem. And yes, everybody has the right to their opinions, but like assholes are the same thing. They both usually stink.
Well, you have a certain amount of magic to you, because thank you very kindly to our dear friend Jude at Women's Standing. Thank you. And Sending freely, not out of guilt or need. We just had to share it this night. Thank you. Thank you. And to an anonymous friend, Darlene and Ralph's challenges are met. And so we have knocked it down to $370. And that's fantastic. And I got a fighting chance to pay the bill tonight.
Thank you, y'all. Because see, if she doesn't pay Verizon, there's no internet. But mostly, if she don't pay the power company, there's no electricity to run the internet, the interweb tubes and all that. Because unfortunately, she don't. I never that we have the money and the funds and the ability to take her off of the antiquated coal, electric, whatever that bullshit is, and get her off. And so she can use solar or wind or whatever she needs to use so she don't put these people no more. And that the money that she's given these evil people to keep her electricity on can go for something else. I don't know, maybe her insurance. Maybe another car because, they only have the one car. Maybe she could actually go away and get a break, and she don't have to take the rig with her, so she can be on air. So she could have to do the constant things of fundraising. Robin is a precious, precious jewel, y'all. We are so fortunate. She could be like those other people that if you want to hear, if you don't listen to her live, her on-demand shows are behind a paywall. That's not her. She does this 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. This shit ain't easy. I don't know how many of us could actually do this shit. And as much as I talk, I know I can talk. I always thought I don't know how much this would make after the first half hour. The time and the research and the time that she does and the dedication that she has to this ongoing concern is beyond. I don't have the words because unfortunately I am not a words person like the girl. But y'all know what I'm trying to say. Don't call yourself an ally. You cannot call yourself an ally. You cannot call yourself a true member of this family and not contribute when you can. I know there are people like myself right now who cannot. But I know there are plenty of people that's sitting at home right now listening, or they're going to listen on the podcast when she drops it. Do what you can. Do what you can and do what you are capable of. I'm giving you money to these people, these multimillionaires, liberal podcasters, radio personalities, or whoever they are. They don't need a dime. They don't need a dime. Okay. They have to worry about their lights being turned off or their cars maybe being, or driving around on bald tires or worrying if the brakes go out or worrying all this other stuff. Come on, y'all. Let's do for Robin the way Robin would do for us if she was capable, if she had the means to do that part. God, girl, it's been a long time since I've been a preacher, hasn't it?
Preach, preacher.
Shit. This is a prayer meeting Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I love her. I love you so much, sis. I do. It kills me that I can't do more at this time. But this is what I'm going through. I'm just going that weeping may endure for the night, but joy surely cometh in the morning. and that whole thing about this jail pass. We gonna get through this. You, me, and the Horn family, all the stuff that we're going through right now, and I know we are all going through it, because I'm going through it. Every day is a struggle for
me. The whole country is going through it, Tracy. The whole country is going through it.
But see, we are so blessed that for 3 hours, 3 hours, 5 days a week, we have refuge. We have a place to go. We have a place that on Friday, we have a place to discuss and talk and be heard. Not just listened to, but heard. And it doesn't cost a dime. Not one red cent. So think about that. Think about that when you're having a shitty day. A fucking shit of a day. When you hear about women damn near having to die before they can get a DNC. When a young black man is murdered just because he's having a mental breakdown or episode. When you have a place to discuss this without somebody calling you liberal, Patsy, snowflake, and all this, where you won't, you can say what you have to say and people won't say, oh, just this or you're just that. You are valued. So I want you guys and people value Robin monetarily like we value her. However, I'm not a word person, but y'all know what I'm trying to say. And I thank you for those who have contributed. I appreciate you. I love you. And I know Robin appreciates it more than you'll ever know.
Absolutely. And you can file away not a word person forevermore, because you've just done more. You brought more power than. Well, you always bring power.
Well, I love you guys. I love you, and we got Friday approach, y'all. So if whatever she doesn't get tonight, let's make it a Friday on the front porch miracle. How about this? So she can go into Saturday and Sunday not worrying about Monday.
Yeah, that'd be two weekends in a row, and that'd be fantastic. But because, you know, the extortionate, you know, thank you, Appalachian Power. I just can't wait till it gets to warm weather and not dealing with all this, because it's still frigid here. It's driving me crazy. Overnight low last night was down in the 30s.
Did I tell you that it was storming here again storming all last night into this morning? I'm like, it's fucking May. I'm gonna call and I'm gonna spy Raphael Sadiq and the rest of his group, Tony. And that lie, it never rains in Southern California. I have words for you right about now. Because this is again, we need the rain. And y'all, I cannot tell you about the wildflowers. I mean, we got wildflowers going alongside a full pie. And it's so green. It's so beautiful. But if we don't. We don't have the infrastructure for this rain. We're not. And, I mean, streets are still flooding. Streets are flooding. It's just people don't know how to drive in clay.
Well, always remember, you know, April showers bring Mayflowers, and Mayflowers bring European colonizers.
Well, I think I told you back when I was a little girl, and that inquisitive me, as again, because it never rains in April. And so I asked my mother when I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and like you said, April showers bring May flowers. So I asked my mom, I said, well, how do we get flowers in May? Because it don't rain in April, Mommy. What's the deal? Well, now not only does it rain in January, February, March, April, and May. It's raining in May. But again, we need the water. We so desperately need the water. And so I have.
I know, yeah. Tell him. Well, tell him he's not a chicken. I would, but we need the eggs.
Right. Exactly. So where are you now with the fundraising?
Well, the challenge got met. We're at $370.
Okay.
So that's $70 away from being done with yesterday and then today. And we'll cross our fingers.
Tomorrow
will be $670.
Okay.
Because, you know, exorbitant. High living. No, not really. I was going to ask you, though, with the writer's strike going on out there, do you ever have an opportunity to drive by where the picket line is and maybe see some proud union members?
My route in the app, they weren't out. I missed because, today is my first day doing my school run since last Friday. And so my route, I do drive by Netflix Studios. And they weren't out there today, but they were for the past couple of days. And I am so out of these people, all these, you know, because, right, so not only is there the WGA strike going on, you know, because they're posted at Paramount Studios, Universal, Warner Brothers, Netflix, and all these other places, but over down in the OC, Orange County Transit Authority, the drivers that drive disabled passengers, mostly like wheelchair passengers, they went on strike today. Or was it yesterday? Because people are tired of working and doing everything and not getting paid.
If you drive by one of the picket lines, give them a honk and a thumbs up.
Oh, trust me. When the LAUSD service workers went on strike, because every time I drove by, I honked, I waved, I gave them a thumbs up. Trust and believe, I am a firm union supporter. One of my first jobs as a cashier at Ralph, I was local USC, United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 770. And I did not realize that, you know, that was in 86. So 20-year-old Tracy, even though she didn't didn't understand and know about what a union was about, but what I did know is that I had paid time off, had a pension, I had Medicare, I had dental, I had vision, I had all these things. I had guaranteed certain amount of hours. I had a guaranteed wage. When I left Ralph in 1992, I was making $15 an hour in 1992. But my rent in 1992 was $350 a month. Okay? So when people start saying, oh, we can raise the increment, you know, we're going to get up to $15 an hour, rather. I'm like, what the fuck? $15 an hour doesn't do shit in L.A. when your rent for a studio apartment is about $2,000 a month. What are you supposed to do with $15 an hour?
Live in a box.
So,
yeah.
Well, you pick up the box on the warm grate on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, that's $1.5 million, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So again, so with the rise, back to WGA strike, there was an older gentleman, well, not even older, but gentleman, I would say a writer about our age, who was about to get ready to retire because, you know, going into their 60s or whatever. Do you know that these people, these young people who are writers for, you know, studios and networks, they are making 23% less than that man was making when he started? 23%.
Yeah, it's going backwards.
And go ahead, Seth, I'm sorry.
No, I just said that's going backwards. That's not acceptable.
Right. That is not acceptable. And not only are they making 23% less, they're working longer because even though, you know, we have these abbreviated seasons now, you know, 8 episodes and stuff like that, they are working, you know, 30 weeks for like just for 8 episodes. Come on. Because of this, all the stuff that goes into writing now. And it's just, and studios and all these people, they're making money in the billions. And they only want what's fair. They only were just like, you're going to be making, you know, money off of us forever. We want to be able to get the fruits of our labor too. So if you're going to be making money off of our work, when you, you know, put it on every time somebody's streaming or what have you, or you sell it to another network and it's a syndication or what have you, why should we not get that money as well? Why should we not get? It's our work that you're making money off of. Oh, you know who is talking about unionizing, Robin? You'll get a kick from this. Wells Fargo workers.
Wow.
I mean, I think that we're getting, people are finally getting it and realizing that it's time. What is it? That song by Sam Cooke. A change is gonna come. You know, I really, because people are not standing by anymore. People are sick. Like I said, sick and tired of being sick and tired. They used the late great Fannie Lou Hamer. People are we are done. We are done with the bullshit. We want to be able. Nobody should have to work 3 or 4 jobs just to cobble together one, and still does not have enough money to pay your rent, and don't have health insurance or anything like that. Nobody who goes to work every goddamn day should have to worry to not even a paycheck, but a half a fucking paycheck away for certain destruction. That ain't right. That ain't right. And shit, it's 507.
Yeah, I gotta get out of here. Tracy, thank you. By the way, a quick viewing tip for you and everybody else. If you've got Peacock, which is probably one of the cheapest platforms out there.
Cheapest? Yes, it is.
Mrs. Davis.
How is that show? I knew you were going to say that. Because I love her. I love Old Girl.
Mrs. Davis is just a weird and trippy, slightly in the future. We are two episodes into it, and it's wow, just wow. So,
I think I might watch that tonight. Well, I can't do the project now. I'm working on the projects that I'm working on for school, well, from the CBO that I'm working with, that's doing an internship. 50-year-old intern, haha. But I'm calling courthouses throughout the LA County and asking what their expungement process is, because each one is different. And we're not so much some of them judges do it ex parte. Some of them do it, review the petition at a hearing. Some of them you can get a hearing date, but you don't have to show up. Some of them there's no hearing date. So yeah, so that's my project, because we're compiling a database. So when people, because we have that the new law that takes into effect July. That has the automatic expungement, depending on your situation. But like for somebody like me, stuff was so long ago. That's why I'm actually going going through the physical expungement process and doing the positioning and stuff like that. So there's a whole swath of people who don't, that were not eligible for it like that. And so we're compiling that database so we can share with, you know, different organizations so they can help, you know, people with the expungement process, at least count in LA County. So I was like, well, I can work on that, but I was so excited. But the thing is, I have to do it during working hours, business hours, because the court is closed at 4:30. But anyway,
yeah,
on that note, I love you so much.
Love you to pieces. Thanks. Thanks for the sermonette. I appreciate it. It's nice when somebody takes that off my shoulders.
Hopefully, my mini sermon on the mount gets you, you know, turns, you know, cause, you know, those fish and those loaves.
Oh, quit it! Quit it! It's the sermon. It's the sermon on the 405.
Exactly, sermon on the 405. I love you, baby. You have a good rest of your evening and good night, fellow Horn family members and community. Y'all, I love y'all. And, you know, if I disappear again for a while, it's not because I don't love you. It's just that everything is just
good. Before you go, I had a note from Jude. After a time away, reconnecting, called out, we all find our own unique paths that assist in seeking emotional and spiritual health. Being consumed with the darkness that currently shrouds us, for me, the poet Rumi's wisdom often shifts my consciousness at critical junctures. May the below be sensed as a lighthouse providing actualization for others in the community tonight. There are countless numbers who walk the reality of this. I love this line. When everything around you appears dark, look again. You may be the light. Within that, an extraordinary amount of clarity is visualized here, and responding to this, we do align. Warmly sent, Jude. P.S. Hello to Tracy, dear.
Thank you, Jude. Hey, Jude. I know you watched Ted Lasso last night.
Yes, no spoilers.
No spoilers, but I love the fact that I never knew the reason behind that song.
You didn't? Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, I know the music, some of it, but I don't know the backstory. But just the fact that, you know, y'all, just let's take a sad song and make it better.
Better. Tracy, have a good night, dear.
Okay, I got you too, baby. Love you.
Bye. Yeah, Ted Lasso is pretty freaking special. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Christopher, for getting us started. Thank you, Darlene and Ralphs, for the challenges. Thank you to our kind internet friend, who is anonymous. And thank you to Jude. Thank you. Little brain blip there. Thank you for getting us down to 370. I'm sorry all these things are just a constant state of desperation. Terribly sorry. Try to make it better somehow, some way in the future. But thank you. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors here and above mentioned. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Hey, Joy in Ann Arbor, happy anniversary, girl. 38 years for her and her hubby today. Happy anniversary. And happy anniversary to Captain Mary. 43 for her and hers. Captain Mary in Memphis. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Roger and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe. Leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors. Let's grow the community. And over at TuneIn, if that's how you listen and you haven't done it yet, press that that heart button, and we'll eventually get to 1,000 unique listeners just right there. And I don't know, maybe they'll slow down the Exxon Mobil ads. Nah, who am I kidding? Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. And a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Check to see if you're eligible for one more before they cost money. It's 7 days until they're not free anymore, something like that. I need to get on that. Wear your mask around the especially around maggots, because they're a filthy lot. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer wherever you go. Carry it with you, pocket and purse. Maintain your social distance. You can let up a little bit over the warm weather months, according to Paul from Parts Unknown. And, if you happen to be out and about and an untrained ultrasound tech comes towards you saying, no, I hear a heartbeat, avoid that fetus fetish tech like the plague, because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.